This is a download from the BBC. For details of our huge new range of audio for free download or podcast and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcast.
Guyana is right on the equator. It's very hot, humid and sticky. Georgetown, the capital, is 6 feet below sea level, protected from the Atlantic by a huge sea wall, a series of pumping stations and dikes. Canals built by the Dutch criss-cross the city. When the tide is very high and the tropical rain very heavy, the rivers swell, the pumps and canals struggle to cope, and Georgetown and its surroundings are liable to flooding. Guyana's politics are also hot. A third of its population is black, the descendants of African slaves imported by the Dutch to work on the sugar plantations. Most of the others are the descendants of Indian workers brought in by the British after the abolition of slavery. The two groups struggle for political dominance. Meanwhile, Guyana's original inhabitants, the Amerindians, have been marginalised. My guide to Georgetown is Julie Lewis, a famous broadcaster on the state-run radio station.
Hi, this is Julie Lewis, and you're listening to The Voice of Guyana, part of the National Communications...
Julie is black. She's also blind. But she has no trouble getting around her station. Cane in hand, she speeds along the corridors, circumventing loose cables, rubbish bins, vacuum cleaners, cleaning ladies, and anyone else who's in the way. She's had plenty of practice at finding her way about. Julie was blind from a very young age. But I discover she was always pretty determined.
As a child, I saw a little bit, enough to run around. My legs were bruised for a number of times because, I would fall off of bridges. I would scrape my knees on all kinds of things that other children would avoid. Well, it never stopped me, and my parents never reined me in, saying that, you're blind or you're nearsighted and you should be indoors. So despite all the little hitches or little glitches, I had a very wonderful childhood. If you ask anyone today about Julie Lewis when she was a child growing up, they would say one thing. Her mother was always there for her. She took her everywhere. She never was ashamed of her, My mother was there for all of the dreams, some realistic, some unrealistic that I had. That is what perhaps made me not be like most other blind persons. I always wanted to achieve. I always wanted to explore. I always wanted to experience things. Anyone who said to me, "You can't," I always had this unquenchable desire to prove them wrong.
Why did you want to go into radio?
It was quite accidental. I didn't. I loved the radio. When I lost my sight, the radio became my friend, actually. My brothers used to call me the radio pro because there wasn't a program on the radio, even on shortwave. I'd be up late into the night listening to the shortwave radio, BBC, Voice of America, you name it, I would listen to it. After I left school, I got a summer job at the radio station. One thing led to another, and the next thing, 3 months after, they employed me.
So you were good?
Well, or they wanted to be nice.
Come on.
Anyway, so that's basically how it happened, and, I'm still here.
And what do you like about producing programs?
I like the creativity I can bring to it. I like the fact that I can take something from scratch and see it develop into something, and I can say, yes, this is my work here. I like the fact, too, I will admit that You get access to people that other people wouldn't get access to. You know, I've spoken to the president. I know all the presidents in Guyana. So
you enjoy talking to the famous?
They're not famous as well. I like talking with the man in the street because you can be their sounding board. And they share with you their issues. Sometimes you feel a little helpless that you can't do much to help them. But whenever you can help, and I do help, you know, I really get a sense of gratification from that as well.
Which is the thing that bugs you most in Guyana, most annoys you?
Well, of course, it'd have to be transportation. It affects so many other persons who are disabled. It affects our abilities to meet. It affects our ability to get around, to, you know, be involved in things in the society. It really is definitely an irritant. And the reason why it's an irritant is because it's all privately owned. And so there's no one really with whom you can negotiate.
Julie and I set off from the radio station and head for the bus park, a scene of intimidating chaos even for those who can see. The touts fight for business. The blind are supposed to travel free, but they generally don't. And they get tugged and pulled and even trampled underfoot.
Well, as you can hear all the engines going, I mean, I suppose for someone who is seeing, it is not difficult to figure out which directions the vehicles are coming from and where they're going. But for someone who is blind, hearing all that buzz around sometimes can be a little disconcerting.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to cross the street.
Yeah, here's one reversing straight into us. We better stop.
And those kinds of things happen a lot as well.
Yeah.
And many times they would ride on my cane.
Oh, they wrote over your cane.
Ever so often that happens.
We take a bus, and I discover that it's not just the getting on and off that's a problem. There's also the noise once you're inside.
So here we are, on a bus.
Here you are on a bus. That's right.
Do they get noisier than this?
Oh, they can. Yeah, they can. And they do, actually. And it just bangs in your ears, you know. You get a piercing sound sometimes when you come out. And then, of course, you're not always able to communicate with the conductor to tell him where you want to come off.
Yeah.
So, you miss your stop.
We are on our way to see a representative of the Minibus Drivers Association, which is nominally responsible for driver behaviour. We meet Gilbert Archer, a former president of the association, who is rather sympathetic to Julie's complaints.
Yes, the noise indeed is becoming a nuisance. I must accept that fact. We have asked that the government take this matter in hand to Parliament and that they either ban the music completely or they put laws in place that will reduce the size of speakers that they have in the buses.
Why don't you just tell your members to turn them off?
Well, we told members that when persons come in the bus and request, even if it's one passenger, request that the music be turned off or turned on. You can do that.
But Julie says nobody takes any notice of it.
Some of them do. Even if you're on the cell phone, they turn it down.
Oh, definitely with the cell phones they do. But as soon as the person is off the cell phone,
it's
back
up. Right? But sometimes some of them do afford you that courtesy by turning down the music.
The chaotic situation at the bus park is another matter that definitely would concern persons with disabilities. So how are we doing in terms of the parking?
Chaos.
Well, let me say this. The chaotic situation at the parks are to be blamed on both sides, the passengers and the operators. Because most parks have rules, but because of the passengers do not comply with the rules, that's where the chaos...
The touts, they don't work with the passengers, they work for the drivers.
But we said to the passengers, do not join buses that are not in the line.
But those touts, when they come to you, they pull you in all directions.
But you as a passenger have a right.
One is holding your right hand, one is holding your left hand, one is pulling your bag.
You can safely say, listen, I don't want anybody to pull me. I know where I'm going.
Do you accept that it's very hard for a blind person at a minibus?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult for a blind person to do it.
So what can you do about it?
But that's what we're saying. I personally, when I was president, and now that I'm advising the president, have tried to address the problem. What we need is more enforcement. I said it publicly, and I'm saying it here, that blind persons should not pay when they travel on minibuses.
Is there anything good about being blind?
Well, I suppose the good thing about being blind is not seeing, in a sense. You know, people come and say, could blind people be racist? I suppose they can, if racism is not necessarily about somebody's color. But the good thing about being blind is that you don't see people's color anyway, so you could come into a room and the people will be there and you haven't a clue who they are, what they look like, and so you deal with them like you would deal with everybody else. You know, it's only when people start to manifest attitudes. For us, it's attitudes. It's all about attitudes and so on. It's never about a physical anything. If somebody says, hey, he's fat, I say, really? Or he's white or he's black, I say, oh, really? It doesn't really matter to me.
There are, you know, serious racial tensions in this country, you know, particularly between people who are black and people who are Asian.
Right.
How would you deal with the racial problems of this country?
That's a good one. I would work with the children, because I think we develop those things from very young. And so maybe work with the kids to let them understand that, like you have in the animal kingdom, you have white dogs and brown dogs and black dogs and birds and all of that are different colors, and flowers are of different colors. We also have variety, but basically we're all the same and we all have the same feelings. We all have the same color blood. We all have the same desires and so on. And so I'd work with the kids from and tell them things like that and hope that that would convince them to see people of a different race as their equals.
Guyana's current president, Bharat Jagdeo, is of Indian extraction. I meet him at the rather beautiful wooden colonial-style state house in the centre of Georgetown. He acknowledges there is still a race problem in today's Guyana, but he puts the blame on British colonialism.
The thing is, who created this? The British created this. That was the only legacy that they left us. The race problem was never an indigenous problem. It was actively fomented by external forces to prevent us from getting independence. We had to overcome that.
But have you?
We have, and no, not totally. Not totally, because a lot of people are still ignorant about that period. But today, Guyana is infinitely more integrated, and people are more comfortable with each other. But this is not a basket case. This is not a country that will trip into ethnic warfare. You walk throughout this country, I can go to any part of this country and walk in some areas almost without security and don't have to worry. Very few leaders can walk around their country like we do here in Guyana.
Half an hour from Georgetown, up the Demerara River on a boat, is the Amerindian settlement of Santa Mission. There I meet the village chief, Reynold Samuels. We talk about the state of his people. Have they been left behind in today's Guyana? Have they lost their culture and their traditions?
Yes, we lose our culture very, very much, very long time ago. Okay, here at Santa, you could have find, let us say, 15, 20 years back, you could have find the women, they would be like baking the cassava bread, our cultural food, you know. It's no more today. Yes, we are generally losing it.
What about your language, Arawak? Have you lost that language?
Yeah, we definitely lost that. We definitely lost that, yeah.
Do you speak Arawak?
Just like a couple of words, you know. I would just like say, Halika Jakuba, you know.
What does that mean?
Oh, that means like how you're doing, you know. I would say, Bante, come here.
If you were to ask one thing of the government to do for you, what would that be?
Yes, we will have to first prove to the government we intend to move on, and then the government would recognize or realize or see us that we as an ambitious people and we need to move and they are there to help us. But first, we got to do something.
I mean, some say that, you know, a lot of you turn to drink. You want to go to town to live up the good life. You're not really serious.
Drinking is a factor in every Amerindian's life.
What about you? Do you drink?
Yes, I drink a little. Occasionally. Yeah, I do.
President Jagdeo agrees that the Amerindians have had a raw deal.
I feel that historically, yes, they were neglected. And we've been trying to correct this, but it's not going to happen immediately. when we got into office, there was no secondary school in the four regions where they live predominantly. Can you imagine condemning all the children in those regions to just maximum a primary education? Now we have secondary schools where a lot of them, 400 are on scholarship in the city, but it will take time.
How long?
It is a process. We have taken people out of the interior. Now they're in the police, the army. We're spending more resources. We have a health unit in every village. We have radio contact with every village. If you go to the community and ask them about the changes, they will tell you about it.
Time now for a lesson from Julie on how to avoid Georgetown's potholes, manholes and street vendors.
OK, Julie, we're on America Street now, which apparently is one of your dreaded streets, yeah?
Well, I once had a tumble in this street here.
What happened?
There was a break in the pavement and one of my feet went into a hole.
Yeah. So how do you manage to get up the street? Let's try.
OK. That's a hole there again.
That's a drain, yeah?
Yeah, that's a whole drain.
So we need to go left a bit?
Yes.
OK. Would you manage this on your own?
I have to. But
there's another drain.
But that drain is going to go the length of the pavement.
It is, yeah.
One thing with Georgetown, it has a lot of drains and, well, we call them trenches. Some people call them canals.
Now,
this is one of the things I'm talking about, right this, there.
Yeah.
A big hole there.
There's a big hole there, yeah.
If you're not careful, you could slip into that.
Yeah, hold my arm here. Okay. So
see, you see, there's just a little, a very narrow strip to walk on.
Yeah, it's very, very narrow.
Right.
Whoops. Somebody here selling bread.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's another place.
Another vendor.
Selling bracelets.
Right.
Maybe the bracelets man will talk to us.
Maybe.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm from London, from the BBC. I'm making a program with Julie here about how difficult it is for blind people. And one of her complaints is people like you have their stall right in the middle of the pavement.
Well, you see, they got a lot of people like her to spy, so what we do, we assist them.
Ah.
You know, we take them to the bus parks and these kind of things.
Yeah.
And make sure that they don't encounter the same situation again.
So you help her?
Yeah, we help her.
She says one way you could help her is if you just took down your stall altogether.
Yeah, we could do that, but you see, it's obstructing us from making a living, you know.
Do you believe him, Julie? He says he helps.
Oh, they do help. They do help sometimes. Yeah, they do. They do. They do.
Yeah, you know her.
Om Vishwani Deva Savitar Duritani Para.
Whilst I'm in Georgetown, the grand old man of Guyanese journalism dies. His name, Chandra Paul Perso, otherwise known as Uncle Paul. The funeral ceremony is held outdoors at the beautiful Promenade Gardens. Many hundreds are there, fellow journalists, friends, the First Lady, and a host of politicians of all races. How did Julie account for such a large turnout?
He would have touched the lives of many persons. People would go to him for advice, suggestions, and he was always willing to talk with anyone who wanted to listen. He had a lot of stories to tell because he covered the Second World War and he covered quite a number of the major events in the world.
He died at the age of 93.
He died at 93, yes.
A very old man.
Very.
One of the bigwigs attending the funeral is the mayor of Georgetown, Hamilton Green. We take the opportunity to quiz him about those potholes and manholes and the problems of getting about. What did he think of Julie's complaints?
Absolutely right. Julie's correct. And I empathise with her, and we need to do something about it.
And are you going to do something about it?
I will try. I keep trying, and I am trying.
But you're the mayor, for heaven's sake. Why can't you do something?
You want me to give some examples?
Yep.
The mayor makes a proposal for raising funds for the city. And every one of those proposals were rejected by the government.
What would you do for Julie if you had the money you asked for?
First of all, we put the physical things in place that will make life less difficult for her. Insist that stores provide the facilities for people who are disabled so they are not disadvantaged.
Julie, are you satisfied with that?
Well, I mean, I live here, I know the environment, and yeah, people like, they're willing to do things if they are made to do it. It's a strange mix, but that's how it is.
So you have the mayor here. What would you like him to do?
Well, I wish he would fix the minibus park and those pavements, and definitely the vendors. I mean, I accept that they have to make a living, but they are really a nightmare for people with disabilities, especially the blind ones.
Mr. Mayor, fix the pavements.
We will.
When?
As soon as possible.
We're in the botanical gardens.
Right.
I mean, it's a really beautiful place. Can you feel that it's kind of green and nice?
Well, you can feel, well, you know, there's always something very wonderful about being among plants and trees, I find.
Yeah.
There's always a sort of quietness that you don't get in any other environment, I find. Yeah. So, well, certainly you can hear the swaying of the trees yeah. when the breeze blows.
Yeah. We just passed a completely crazy man.
Yeah, a lot of they're everywhere.
Are they?
I remember one time a friend and I were going down the street and suddenly this guy came up. I will lash you all, I will lash you all. You're playing, you're blind, you're not blind for me. And he had a big stick in his hand waving, coming towards us. Well, luckily, some passers-by apprehended him and rustled him to the ground and got the stick away from him, because I'm not sure what he would have done with it. Those things happen, but they're a menace to blind people, though. They are, because you can't see, so avoid them if they want to get violent with you.
Listen to those completely mad birds.
Yeah, I love to listen to the birds.
Do you know what kind of birds they are?
No. Wherever I live, we have a lot of trees, and so very early in the morning, the birds would wake me up.
But you don't know what they are.
No, but they sound very good. That's all that matters to me, really. They sound very beautiful. It's very beautiful to hear them.